sweet by and by.
Live Thursday night on the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. If you are among the ultra-exclusive live audience, you've been listening to selections from a new compact disc put out by Uncut Magazine. And in case you don't know, it is a music magazine based out of Britain. And it was a CD that was compiled to accompany the cover story, which is Bob Dylan, 1968, the year he came back from the dead. That's right, the year he came back from the dead. So we're going to examine that article on the program tonight, and we'll be taking calls at 1-877-REVERE-0. We are live on revereradionetwork.com, revereradio.info, and total411.info, any of those sites, and click on donate buttons, and click on Google Ads, and that is how you support this program. So there you have it, and we also have the chat room there at, so you click on chat and you go check out the chat and you go do that. So we got a big program ahead of us tonight, and let's check in as we always do with, Congressman Dr. Ron Paul to find out what's going on in the United States Congress. I'll tell you one thing that happened to Congress today. The House did not pass this Protect America Act, which is a law that would legalize the NSA listening to all the phone calls and retroactively legalize all the illegal spying done by the big telephone companies. So that was quite interesting. We'll get into that. We have a press release from the ACLU.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for February 10th. As a United States Congressman, I take my oath to uphold all the Constitution and the Bill of Rights very seriously. Unfortunately, too many in Washington, D.C. believe they can pick and choose which provisions of the Constitution they can uphold. For example, many politicians, judges, and bureaucrats believe they have the power to disregard our right to own guns, even though the Second Amendment explicitly guarantees the people's right to keep and bear arms. Like the Founding Fathers, I believe that the right to keep and bear arms is fundamental to a free society. Where law-abiding citizens are most freely allowed to defend themselves, communities are safer, while crime rises when law-abiding people's access to firearms is restricted. Gun laws only disarm those who respect the law. Those with criminal tendencies do not turn in their weapons and reform their ways because government bureaucrats enact statutes to tell them to. Gun control laws turn peaceful citizens into sitting ducks for criminals to prey upon. Ironically, one of the most draconian gun laws in the nation is the nation's capital. Banning guns did not make D.C. safer. In fact, in D.C., crime rose after the gun ban went into place. Fortunately, last year, a federal court struck down D.C.'s gun ban in the case of D.C. versus Heller. This is the first time in years a court found a gun control law violated the Second Amendment. However, victory is not secured. The city of D.C. has appealed, and the Supreme Court has agreed to hear the case. If the lower court's decision is upheld, law-abiding citizens should once again be allowed to defend themselves in the D.C., and I would expect it to become a much safer city. It would also set a very positive precedent that could affect gun laws all over the country. However, a Supreme Court decision that the District of Columbia's gun laws are a reasonable infringement on constitutional rights could severely set back the gun rights movement. This is why I have signed on to a brief headed by Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson and signed by a majority of Congress asking the Supreme Court to uphold the lower court's decision and take a stand for stricter standards of constitutional review for gun laws. I am pleased to work with Senator Hutchinson and so many of my other colleagues on this important issue. As a member of the Second Amendment Caucus, I will continue to work with those of my colleagues who support gun rights and grassroots activists to defend Second Amendment rights of all Americans. Thank you for calling this update. A new update is
no problem.
Number 888-322-1414 every Monday morning.
Oh, shit. All right. Ron Paul telling us about the gun laws in D.C., and he was right. Material was a little fresher. Back when Total Information Radio was live on Monday night. So we do have at least one person who expressed an interest in calling in. We'll get back to him later, I guess. But let's get into this whole Bob Dylan issue. And maybe if you have never tuned in before, you might not have known why we might find this cover story, The Year He Came Back from the Dead, so strange. Well, it's because today's Bob Dylan is not the man who originally was Bob Dylan, a kid named Robert Zimmerman, a Jewish kid from Minnesota. And he apparently died in 1966. And we got this other guy. And that's what this article is all about, even though, of course, it's couched in terms of, like, I don't know, you know, here we go. This is about when the rumors start. Dylan, we're now hearing, has survived the motorcycle crash, but he's in a coma, dead to the world, the end of July 1966. He has brain damage, said to be irreparable, it's otherwise claimed. So this is what people, this is what teenagers were telling each other in July 1966. Yet again, by other accounts, he's been severely burned, permanently scarred, so badly disfigured you wouldn't recognize him if he turned up on your doorstep with a sign around his neck with his name written on it. That's like one of his videos. In another version of things, he's slowly recuperating from multiple injuries so severe he'll never wholly recover, being fed intravenously, something you'll have to get used to. Oh, that sounds fun, huh? It goes on. This is uncut February 2008, and the author doesn't... I'm sure the author's listed somewhere. We'll talk about that later. When Anthony Scudetto publishes his 1974 biography of Dylan, he reports authoritatively that the accident was indeed wholly as serious as originally reported, that Dylan had, in fact, broken his neck, suffered brain concussion, which had left him for a short time with amnesia, been briefly paralyzed, suffered internal injuries bad enough to make doctors fear for his life. The veracity of Scuduto's account is only finally debunked, supposedly, by Howard Sound's 2001 biography of Dylan, Down the Highway, in which it's made clear that there had indeed had been an incident. It's nowhere near as bad as later would be claimed. Now, what's interesting about the 2001 biography of Dylan, Down the Highway, is that was released more or less in tandem at that time, if you remember. There's a big Bob Dylan interview on 60 Minutes, I believe. Or no, maybe. When was that? Was that in 2001? I do know in 2001 there was the definitive new Bob Dylan album. And that release date was September 11th, 2001, which is very interesting because, of course, we've talked about the other doppelganger, the so-called Paul McCartney. And he was pretty intimately intertwined with the 9/11 PSYOP. And it's on a previous edition of Told Information Radio. Maybe we'll make that available. Going on, Dylan seizes the opportunity to escape, however briefly, the pressures multiplying around him. Principally, the 64-date U.S. tour's rapacious manager Albert Goldman's book for August was that Dylan's convinced will kill him, which is now canceled. Dylan spending 6 weeks recuperating at the house of his doctor, Ed Thaler. Okay, so this is all, this is just all what he's being told. So, if Dylan wasn't, as we'd all heard, stricken to the point of death, being wheeled hither and yon by duly attentive medical staff and dribbling into his lap, what during the months that follow the motorbike spill is Bob actually doing? Okay, so it goes on, and now they're trying to tell us what he was up to during the almost 2 years he disappeared. And, you know, it doesn't get that specific. This is right after Blonde on Blonde, which was the last Dylan album before the original Robert Zimmerman died. And they have quotes in here from some of the Nashville session men. And what's interesting, and you heard a bunch of Nashville kind of music earlier on the show, is Dylan's last album was down in Nashville, and we'll go on. It appears that so were the next two. And so we get to see who was constructing the new Bob Dylan. We can start asking why. Charlie McCoy. Okay, this is one of the musicians down there with it. With Blonde on Blonde, I think there was a question mark in his mind all along about whether he should have even been in Nashville, recalls Charlie McCoy when Uncut talks to him about John Wesley Harding and the record that follows it. Now, John Wesley Harding, an aside here, that was the first post-motorcycle accident record. And earlier we heard the Carter Family song, John Hardy. And that is, I believe, about the same story. It's about an outlaw from the Old West. And if I'm wrong, you can call and correct at 1-877-REVERE-0. Charlie McCoy continues, "The idea of recording here was something he'd been talked into by Bob Johnston. I got the feeling he was never really that comfortable with it. But when he came back for John Wesley Harding, he'd had huge success and had worked with us before." Okay, here we go. This is a money quote right here. "It was after his motorcycle accident, and he was different. He seemed more reserved." So, there you go. I think we might try to get some Blonde on Blonde for you here. Let's see if we can find that real quick. Okay, we'll go on. With Blonde on Blonde, Dylan was writing songs in the studio. Then we get called in to record them. It was tough because we worked those sessions at night. I had no idea we'd be there till 4:30 in the morning waiting on Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands to be finished. By Nashville standards, none of us could believe you could spend that much time on one album. But with John Wesley Harding... this is interesting. With John Wesley Harding, everything was finished and written by the time he went to the studio. Okay, by who was finished? passive voice. Okay, so I passed that out. Moving on. We recorded that whole album in 9.5 hours. It was such a change from Blonde on Blonde. So anyway, Dylan really didn't have much to say in the studio. Now this is John Wesley Harding. I was a session leader, the one who communicated between him and the band. I'd ask him, what do you think if we do this or that? And he'd always say, well, I don't know, what do you think? That's how he was. So I finally decided to come up with a plan and go with it. So basically, this guy, Charlie McCoy, he's basically taking credit for the John Wesley Harding album. So I finally decided to come up with a plan and go with it. Continuing. And I figured if he didn't like it, he'd speak up. But he never spoke up. So we went with whatever we felt was right. Believe me, there were no instructions at all. You'd literally pick up the guitar and play the song. You were relying on your instinct. So there you go. What do you think about that, huh? All right, we are, let's take another music break. Listen to a little pre and post Dylan. We're going to check out Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands from Blonde on Blonde. That was a song that Charlie McCoy just mentioned. Spending all night working on. And then after that, we are going to hear whoever Bob Dylan is or was at the time with Johnny Cash on Nashville Skyline, girl from the North Country. And there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there too on that album. But here we go. 1877 Revere Zero.
With your mercury mouth in the missionary times, and your eyes like smoke, and your prayers like rhymes, and your silver cross, and your voice like chimes. Oh, who do they think could bury you with your pockets well protected at last, and your streetcar visions which you place on the grass, and your flesh like silk, and your face like glass. Who could they get to carry you? Sad-eyed lady of the lowlands, where the sad-eyed prophet says that no man comes. My warehouse eyes, my Arabian drums. Should I put them by your gate? Oh, sad-eyed lady, should I wait? With your sheets like metal and your belt like lace and your deck of cards missing the jack and the ace, and your basement clothes and your hollow face. Who among them didn't think he could outguess you? With your silhouette when the sunlight dims, your eyes where the moonlight swims, and your matchbook songs and gypsy hymns. Among them we try to impress you. Said I'd lead you the lowlands where the sad-eyed prophets say that no him by your gate. For sad-eyed lady, should I wait? The kings of Tyrus with their convict list are waiting in line for that geranium. Like this, but who among them really want just to kiss you with your childhood flames on your midnight rug and your Spanish manners and your mother's drugs? Cowboy mouth and your curfew plugs. Who among them do you think could resist you? Said I'd lead you up the lowlands where the sad-eyed prophets say that no. I leave them by your gate. Oh, sad-eyed lady, should I wait? Oh, the farmers and the businessmen, they all did decide to show you where the dead angels are that they used to hide. But why did they pick you to sympathize with their side? How could they ever mistake you? They wished you'd accepted the blame for the farm. But with the sea at your feet and the phony false alarm and with the child of the hoodlum wrapped up in your arms, how could they ever have persuaded you? Said I'd lead you the Lord with a sad-eyed prophet see that no man's come. I wear a house as my Arabian drums. Should I leave them by your gate? Oh, sad-eyed lady, should I wait? With your sheet metal memory of Canary Row and your magazine husband who one day just had to go. stand with your thief. You're on his parole with your holy medallion. You're in your fingertips now that fold, and your saint-like face, and your ghost-like soul. Who among them could ever think he could destroy you? Sad eyed lady of the lowlands, where the sad eyed prophet say that no man comes. Now where I should I leave them by your gate? Oh, sad-eyed lady, should I wait?
Rumors, rants, and debates. It's the worldwide home of free speech radio. RevereRadioNetwork.com. Total free speech, even when it's ugly.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
See for me that her hair's hanging down. It curls and falls all down her breast. See for me that her hair's hanging down. That's the way I remember her best.
If you go when the snowflakes fall, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see for me if she's wearing a coat so warm to keep her from the howling.
If you're traveling
in the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline. Please say hello to one who lives there, for she was once a true love of mine. In the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there, for she once was a true love.
And we are back on Total Information Radio, live on Revere Radio Network. We have a call-in number, 1-877-REVERE-0. We're talking about how Robert Zimmerman, died in July 1966. And another person or persons assumed the role of Bob Dylan. You might remember there was a film recently, a biography of Bob Dylan, all capital letter, corporate person, Bob Dylan. Just like how after James Paul McCartney died, all the Beatles albums had the word Beatles in all capital letters, not the Beatles, with a capital B and a lowercase Eatles. So going back to this article in Uncut, well, actually, back to the songs we just heard, did you notice that Johnny Cash was taking the lead in that duet he did on National Skyline, where as opposed to we heard about Dylan's all-night craftsmanship before Zimmerman died, and that first song, the 11-minute Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. So what was all that about? Well, as poor an album National Skyline was in some ways received, we'll get back to this article in a minute, but I wanted to read you the liner notes from National Skyline. Now, the liner notes won the Grammy for liner notes. And these liner notes were written by Johnny Cash. And it's basically a poem, I guess, free verse, and it's titled, Of Bob Dylan. He says, there are those who do not imitate, who cannot imitate, but then there are those who emulate, I'm Johnny Cash, at times to expand further the light of an original glow, knowing that to imitate the living is mockery, and to imitate the dead is robbery. There are those who are beings complete unto themselves, whole, undaunted, a source, as leaves of grass, as stars, as mountains alike, yet unalike. Each is complete and contained. And as each unalike star shines, each ray of light is forever gone, to leave way for a new ray. And a new ray, as from a fountain, complete unto itself, full, flowing. So are some souls like stars in their words, works, and songs like strong, quick flashes of light from a brilliant erupting cone. So where are your mountains to match some men? This man can rhyme the tick of time, the edge of pain, the what of sane, and comprehend the good in men, the bad in men. Can feel the hate of fight, the love of right, and the creep of blight at the speed of light. The pain of dawn, the gone of gone, the end of friend, the end of end, by math of trend. What grip to hold what he is told, how long to hold, how strong to hold, how much to hold of what is told. And no, the yield of rend, the break of bend, the scar of mend. I'm proud to say that I know it. Herein is a hell of a poet, and lots of other things, and lots of other things. Johnny Cash. So, huh? What is that about? There are those who do not imitate, who cannot imitate. And then talking about to imitate the dead is robbery. Knowing that to imitate the living is mockery, and to imitate the dead is robbery. Who is imitating a dead person here? Well, he's saying, you know, who's really dead? Each ray of light, you know, and as each unalike star shines, you know, as the other poet said, not quite yet, but we all shine on. And, you know, I am he is, you are me, and we are all together. And, complete unto itself, full flowing, so are some souls like stars. So, sounds to me a kind of justification for still having a Bob Dylan, even after Robert Zimmerman is dead. And he's trying to redeem whoever this new Bob Dylan guy is. This man can rhyme the tick of time, the edge of pain, and it goes on. Herein is a hell of a poet, and lots of other things, and lots of other things. So, I think in a way he's introducing the permanent Bob Dylan, if you will, to the world. I don't think they had settled on a permanent one through John Wesley Harding and of course, after the disappearance, I think his first public musical appearance, I believe, was on the Johnny Cash Show. One of the actors who played Bob Dylan in the recent film was an actress. And, of course, the original Bob Dylan was very slight and still rather young and effeminate at the time. And it's perfectly feasible that one of the early replacements could have been a woman. So, there you have that. We're going to go back and listen to more of the fake Bob Dylan Nashville Skyline record. If you're listening live tonight, you can call in at 1-877-REVERE-0.
Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Whatever colors you have in your mind, I show them to you, and you see them shine. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay, stay with your man a while. Till the break of day, let me see you make 'em smile. His clothes are dirty, but his hands are clean. And you're the best thing that he's ever seen. Stay, lady, stay, stay with your man a while. Of you.
stay. Stay while the night is still ahead. I long to see you in the morning light. I long to reach for you in the night. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead.
So, what did you think about that? Right there, Lay Lady Lay. Is that kind of a creepy song from Bob Dylan off of National Skyline? Of course, we've talked about the Bob Dylan issue on this show before, and we've mentioned how, you know, he would write 30 pages and use one page for a song. So there's one potential source for some of that music after Robert Zimmerman died. Of course, the Scorsese documentary that was on PBS last year ended right when he died. But you know, we was with all these people like Johnny Cash that we were talking about earlier, and you know, what is going on there? Who killed Dylan in the first place? Was it an accident? Was he killed by the CIA, the FBI? And why would these people agree to take on resurrecting him? Was it because they wanted their own, you know, young Woody Guthrie person who wasn't part of, you know, everybody, all the young people who were getting on acid and getting all fucked up? And, you know, did Johnny Cash cut a deal with the devil of some kind? What, you know, literally or in the form of J. Edgar Hoover? You know, they got some, here's a quote from, I guess, somebody supposed to be famous now, Lamb Chop. It's Kurt Wagner. That's the name of Nightcrawler from the X-Men. But, you know, so assuming he was a kid then. I was disappointed by it, mainly because I was hoping for something he'd already done. Okay. For me, Blind on Blind was a much more important record. But John Wesley Harding sounded like demos. Me and my friends were bamboozled by the whole thing. Now, bamboozled. Bamboozled means fucked over. It doesn't just mean confused. It means fucked over. Confused and fucked over. So that was an interesting word choice. Maybe this allegedly famous musician, Lamb Chop's Kurt Wagner, is enough of a musician to know by at this point in his life that he was indeed bamboozled. So there you go. Some more about John Wesley Harding. An album of dire prophecy, although nothing specific is predicted. Instead, it's awash with looming dread, something ghastly lurking over yon horizon, stirring malevolently, whose anticipated arrival will bring nothing more cheerful than eternal gloom. Because of the Jimi Hendrix version, All Along the Watchtower is indelibly linked with Vietnam. But Dylan's denuded original was the more timeless evocation of an ominous barren wasteland, scrubbed by a howling wind and about your shore to be visited by widespread calamity. And to me, there's also a lot of Christ imagery in the Watchtower, Christ being the Joker, the thief, hanging next to him, of course, like in the Gospels. And the Messiah Savior figure as the jester, that's something we see a lot. We see it some in the Bob Dylan story, but I think the Paul McCartney story, there's a lot of that going on there, too. I did want to read that press release from the ACLU. House stands up to white to threats from let's start over. House stands up to threats from the White House on domestic surveillance. ACLU urges careful consideration of cherished constitutional rights. And this is released today. Washington, D.C. The Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives stared down the White House today and decided to stick with their version of revisions to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The House voted to adjourn without letting the phone companies off the hook for breaking the law by helping the government spy on Americans. The House is leaving town and allowing the unconstitutional Protect America Act to expire this weekend. And they have a statement from someone at the ACLU DC Legislative Office. And it's heartening that the House is standing up to the bullying from the president. The House is saying it will not give in to the administration's lies and fear mongering. This administration has abused its power time and time again. And finally, the House is standing up and saying no. The House is also sticking with the decision made back in November not to give the phone companies and the internet providers amnesty for illegal actions over the past 6 years when they provided Americans private phone calls and emails to the government without warrants. Members of the House were wise to let the clearly unconstitutional Protect America Act expire. Now, if the government wants to wiretap Americans on American soil, it needs to get a warrant from the FISA court. The House sent the president a welcome reminder from the people. Of course, the House is a branch of the federal government closest to the people, I guess. That no one is above the law. Not the telecom providers, not the White House. So, yeah, we'll see how long that lasts anyway. Frederickson said that although the Protect America Act is set to expire this weekend, it doesn't mean the new mass and targeted surveillance programs authorized under that act will expire. Certain provisions of the Protect America Act will live beyond the law's expiration date, including orders under the PAA can last for up to a year. So there you go. Orders issued in the past 6 months will continue through their internal expiration date. So it means if they authorize something, they authorize, you know, oh, well, we got a special warrant to spy on everybody on Verizon. So that's good for a year anyway. Maybe President Obama will renew the law. Orders are not specific to individuals and can pick up new targets in the future. Although the orders are secret, we know the authority granted to the executive branch allowed them to create whole programs of surveillance that are not confined to any specific individual or facility. Is kind of what I was saying, like all Verizon. In fact, that breadth is precisely what the PAA is about. So as programs continue, it stands to reason agents can pick up new suspects, phone lines, email accounts, etc., without the need to return to court. In addition to all these continuing PAA authorities, if the government wants to listen to terrorists abroad, it has a host of other options, collecting the call overseas where no warrant is required at all, collecting the call here without an order under the 72-hour emergency provision, or collecting the call here under a FISA court order. So there you go. I guess that's some kind of small victory, and we'll see how long it lasts. Probably not very long. I'll comment on the presidential election. It looks like the Democrat convention could be mass chaos because they're saying Hitlery is going to need to get super delegates. And the whole, if you've been following the Webster-Tarpley argument, which we played on this program a couple weeks ago, the worry is that they're ginning up this kind of fake mobocracy with appeals to democracy kind of color revolution that's been going on in Eastern Europe and in the former Soviet republics associated with factions of the shadow government with Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Carter, President Carter advisor, who's now hooked up with the Obama team. And I see that happening here, just like the CIA, you know, ran all those operations killing foreign dictators, and they brought it here and killed JFK. And so now you see the same kind of election operation, and it's a strong emphasis on the people and democracy, and even if, you know, the polls and everything's fraud, you just keep repeating democracy and the people's choice over and over, and you can see that coming to a head in the Democrat election, where Obama might have more delegates elected in all these primaries and caucuses, but Hillary might have more Democratic elected officials across the country, which also get to vote as delegates. And if that happens, you could see the Democrat Party split with the Obama operation going third party and pushing this all the way. Another thing is there's been a lot of, I've been hearing these people comment lately how much MSNBC is pimping Obama and hate Hillary. I hadn't really picked up on that because the only MSNBC program I usually watch is Keith Olbermann, who's been crawling up the Clintons' assholes for like 10 years, and he originally quit because he was so sad and crying that his buddy Bill Clinton, his hero Bill Clinton, had been impeached, and he's still kind of bitchy about the whole thing. But I had occasion to watch some of these other MSNBC shows, and they really are. They're drilling this big new mobocracy, pro-Obama, anti-Hillary line, which is it's very interesting. That's Dan Abrams, who's supposed to be the head of MSNBC. I caught on his show. He took over as a programming director. He also hosts a show at night, but he took over the whole station, I guess about a year ago. Now, even though, of course, I guess Oberman has a lot of influence and so on and so forth. But, yeah, if that's the line he's given out, I can see where that's coming from. And Hillary's been making comments that, like, oh, Fox News is friendlier to me than MSNBC. And, of course, they are, I guess, because Rupert Murdoch, the British agent, is a friend of his. So it's hard to keep connecting all the dots, because you have the whole Obama with the Kenyan connection and the Luo tribe that his father's from, also allied with the British and General Electric pushing Obama very hard. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward. And if that breaks up, you know, there's no reason why the Republican convention won't follow suit and break up. Because by that time, it'll be September, and a lot could have happened by then. And if this Ron Paul march goes, you know, that could always fold back into a surprise third party run. I'm thinking, you know, maybe a Barr-Paul libertarian ticket will be in place once before a Paul-Barr ticket would contest if something goes wrong with McCain in September. I don't know. We do have a bit more doppelganger news. I was trying to pull some audio for you from the Grammys. We're going to check out now and analyze the what was on the Grammys. And it's a Cirque du Soleil performance, and starts off with A Day in the Life. We probably won't listen to all of that. What was interesting, of course, is that they brought out a Beetle car, just like the, you know, VW Beetle, just like the one you might see on the cover of Abbey Road, and tore it apart in the middle of the song. This could be symbolic of Paul's death, the original James Paul McCartney's death, because, of course, the legend, James Paul McCartney, died in a car crash. Of course, we don't know that for sure, if that's how he died, but it is, that is how most people at the time believed he had died.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade, and though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw
and I want to hear it because it's a song, Let It Be. And if you listen to that song, it's actually rather creepy, because like the evil song Hey Jude, which is written by the Paul clone and Yoko Ono, specifically to brainwash John, it encourages apathy. And the way it was presented on the Grammys,
Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be.
mockery. There will be an answer. Let it be.
Was the Sergeant Pepper anniversary, 40th or 41st anniversary? Last year was 40th anniversary, and they gave a special award to the people who received it were Ringo Starr and George Martin, and the way. George Martin, who was their producer, received the award. It was very odd. It was very odd. And I'm going to try to get that audio for you.
So you can say a few words, but it's great. This thing started with George Harrison idea. Talking to Slay, and I think we all have to pay tribute. The Ringo here,
yeah,
and George, and Paul, who can't be with us, and of course Joel. And I guess we miss those guys a hell of a lot. But they are the people who are behind this award here. Not to mention my son Giles.
My son.
But why don't we? Turn to things 9/11. I know we had someone who said they were going to call. It doesn't look like he's going to call, but we did get audio. If you tuned in last week, you heard Sure, our friend Jeff from Canada up at pumpitout.com, and we had a caller, and we were talking about what Jeff does and how he calls some of these shady figures involved in 9/11. And we gave him big props for keeping his cool. Now, I haven't even heard this one yet. This is to someone who's a photographer. And, you know, I'm not even really sure. Maybe we'll find out by listening why he was called. From what I know, he photographed some of the aftermath. So he's not someone who did any fake plane photos, I don't think. So I wonder what he has to tell us. But our very zen Canadian friend, apparently, even he can get driven a little angry by some of this 9/11 bullshit we're all fed. So, let's check that out. I believe the man being called is Maziel, M-I-S-E-L. And go to revereradio.info, 1-877-REVERE-0.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Jay.
Dale?
Jay.
Yeah, who is this?
Hey, is this Jay?
Yeah, who is this?
Hey, it's Jeff. Jay, what's going on? I've been trying to get a hold of you for like 3 weeks now.
Who is this? I'm sorry.
Is this Jason Mazel?
This is Jay Mazel.
Yeah. Okay.
And who are you?
It's me. It's Jeff. Remember I talked to you like 3 weeks ago? I need to ask you something, Jay. I need you to do me a favor, Mutt.
Sure.
Listen, shut up for 1 second and describe to me what you saw in 9/11.
Look, I'm not playing with you. I don't like anybody calling me this late. Wait,
Jason, come on, buddy.
Hey,
please.
Don't fuck around with me.
Hey, don't fuck around. Come on. Why fuck around? Jay, I'm begging you right now, as a friend, like, please, man, I'm begging you. What did you really see on 9/11, brother? Please, Jay. Please tell me. Come on. Jay, please. Cocksucker. He hung up on me. I'm calling him back. Jay.
Yes.
Jay.
Look, I don't
want to hang up on me, man.
I don't want
to
talk.
Look, I'm not going to talk to you ever again the rest of my life.
Fine.
All I want you to do is tell me what you saw.
I'm not talking to you, okay? Goodbye.
Please. No. Cocksucker. What an asshole. 212-431-5013. Son of a bitch took his phone off the hook. Jay Mazel. 212-431-5013. I talked to Pedgeman tonight. I can't believe that.
You gonna make a real answer?
Jay, you gotta talk. Let me just say something to you before you hang up, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't even want to ask you anything, but I'm going to tell you.
It's 1 o'clock.
Can you shut up for 1 second, buddy?
Fucking family up.
Look, Jay, this is important. Let me talk.
Where are you?
Hey, let me talk for 1 second. Shut up. Listen to me. I talked to fucking Michael Hazzard-Conti. I talked to Luke Korchesny. I talked to Evan Fairbanks. I talked to that guy you were with, David Hanshue from the fucking Daily New Yorker. Okay, man, I talk to everybody, brother. Listen to me. You're not fucked, okay? You got a lot of people that'll be behind you. You could come out and you could be the one that fucking tells me.
I have no idea who you are. I don't want to talk to you. Just do not call me back again, okay?
Okay, listen. 5 more seconds of your time and I'll never call you again.
Go ahead.
I want you to describe to me what you saw on 9/11.
I saw a
You told me you saw a fucking flower! If... Son of a bitch. You son of a bitch hung up on me. I gotta call him back. What a son of a bitch.
Genre of this now.
Who is this?
Hi, is Jay there, please?
I don't know who you are.
My name's Jeffrey Hill.
That's fine.
Okay, I just talked to Jake. I need to talk to him for 5 more seconds, please.
All right, listen, you've called before. If you...
Listen, I just talked to him 5 seconds ago. I know he's right beside you. Can I please talk to him for 5 seconds? Ask him one more question, and I promise I'll never call him back again. Okay, is that a deal?
I mean, you've got done this before.
Listen to me. Let me talk to him for 5 seconds, and I promise you, lady, I promise you, I will never, ever, ever call back again, as long as I live. Just give me 5 seconds with him. Please, man, it's so important. Hello? Hello? You hung up on me, you fucking bitch. What a fucking bitch. I can't believe I got hung up on.
Go ahead.
Hello? Jay?
Yes?
Listen to me, buddy. I'll never call you again, I promise you.
Okay.
I just want 5 seconds of your time, buddy.
Go ahead.
I want you to tell me what you said on the Charles Rose, or whatever.
What I what?
With Charles, remember you were on the fucking show with Charles Rose?
Yeah.
And fucking David Hanchu and a couple guys?
Yeah.
And they passed down the line and they said, what did you see? And you fucking described what you saw. And you fucking said some fucking wacky ass, fucking abstract, fucking, well, it looked like a fucking flower, fucking butterfly. I don't know what the fuck, you know what I mean?
Alright, what do you want me to tell you?
I want you to tell me what you saw.
I saw something.
Don't fucking tell. I want you to tell me, please.
Giant fireball about 40 feet.
Did you see a plane coming in?
Huh?
Did you see a plane coming in?
No, it was.
Did you hear a plane coming in?
There's a building which I couldn't see.
You saw it just blow up like a butterfly, right?
No, like a 40-story high flower, yeah.
Okay, but did you see a plane coming in?
No.
Did you hear?
No.
Nothing.
It was coming from the other...
Jay, do you understand what you're saying right now?
Pardon?
Do you understand what you're telling me right now?
Yeah, I understand what I'm telling you.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
Do you know Clifton Cloud?
No.
He was the one that took the one from Kent Avenue? Do you know that they're vacating everybody from 475 Kent Avenue?
No, I don't know anything about that. I really can't talk to you anymore.
You,
okay?
Jay.
For 5 seconds, I've been...
Listen, do you remember David Hanchu?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I talked to him. You know what he told me?
Yes.
He told me that, and I know where he was. He was standing right under the fucking tower, and he didn't see no fucking plane. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I have no idea what you're saying.
There was no fucking plane on 9/11 on the World Trade Centers. Nor was there a plane at the Pentagon, nor was there a plane at Shanksville.
Okay, fine. If you believe that, fine, okay?
So you're telling me you saw a plane in the sky on 9/11?
No.
Eh?
I never saw the plane that went in.
So why would you disagree with me right now?
Listen to me, and...
You did not see a plane strike the World Trade Center.
Listen to me, will you?
You probably saw lots of planes flying by. Didn't you? Oh, fuck.
I saw a plane go over my building.
Yeah?
There are photos of the plane going over my building.
Was it one of those white EB-4s?
I didn't see that.
Do you know what an EB-4 is?
All right, look, will you do me a favor?
What?
Whatever you do, you're not going to convince me, so please don't waste your time.
Jay,
my time.
You're a fucking artist.
Failed it.
Okay?
Bleep.
You should be using all your talent right now. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Are you still there? Jay, you should be using all your talent right now. If you're a fucking artist, you should be using all your talent right now to get the word out.
I don't believe you.
You're disgusting, then. I'm sorry, but I have to say you're disgusting.
Okay, are you finished?
Do you actually believe the official story of 9/11? Oh, my God.
Okay, you're entitled to your opinion.
Am I, like, a retard, or what? Like,
I just think...
Come on now, Jay.
Look.
Are you telling me I'm totally fucking delusionally paranoid, and I'm fucking retarded, and I should go on disability? Because I'm totally fucked up and I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about?
Would you please let me get to sleep and leave me alone? Okay?
I'll never talk to you again, but just answer the questions.
And you may very well...
I promise you, Jay. I promise you, buddy. I'll never, ever call you again.
Okay, thank you very much.
But I swear, like, I appreciate that the fact that you talked to me for a little bit.
Okay.
And for the record, I want to ask you one last time, did you see a fucking plane hit the tower?
Did not.
Did you see any plane hit any tower?
No, I didn't.
But you were right there.
Yeah. but I saw it.
Your vision should have been, like, just as good as David Hanshew's vision. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, if you were right there.
We're done.
You should.
Okay. Can we be done now, please?
Do you think those guys are lying on the videos? Jay, have you looked at the videos? They're fake. Look at the videos.
Well,
that goes beyond Newton's laws of physics.
Look at Robert Clark's picture.
If those videos are real, Newton's laws of physics and motion,
okay,
and Newton's laws do not apply anymore in this day and age.
I hope you fulfill your promise and don't call me again, okay? Thank you.
And there you have it.
Thank you, Jay. I'm sorry. But I'm sorry.
And there's Jeff L., trying to ask, an important 9/11 eyewitness, if he realizes the import of what he saw, in fact, did not see on 9/11. And what he did not see was a Nazi. No, he did not see, of course, a Boeing passenger airliner crashing into any building, because he was not watching on television. He was watching what they say for reals right there in Meat Space in Southern Manhattan on 9/11. So that was very interesting. What else can we talk about tonight? We just about have ready for analysis. Actually, why don't we harass, since calling people seems to be the end thing tonight. Let's see if we can find someone to call. Real quick. Which one do I want to use? That's the same number. Alright. We just heard the newest 9/11 transgression artist.
We are unable to go.
And we could not get in touch with the first 9/11 transgression artist. Nico helped, said he was going to try to call into the program tonight. But he's involved with a new project with former We Are Change people called 9/11 TV Fuckery. And I'm not really quite sure what that's all about, so we were hoping to get him on to explain it to us. But the whole idea of transgression and confrontation is where that's coming from, and Nico has adopted that work by Jeff Hill, because it's his first confrontational, transgressional work of 9/11. Now, go to revereradio.info and click on the donate button and give us a lot of money. Peace.